Welcome to Capital Roots, the podcast where rural life runs deep and Texas pride runs strong. Brought to you by Capital Farm Credit, a customer-owned cooperative committed to supporting farmers, ranchers, and rural communities across the Lone Star State. I'm your host, Clint Cryer. Join us as we dig into the stories, traditions, and the innovations that shape agriculture and the rural lifestyle we all love. Welcome back to another episode of Capital Roots. Today we're with a really special person here in Washington, D.C. Another visit while we're here on the Farm Credit fly-in, but I've got Triple S, Skylar Souter from Sudan, Texas. She's the Vice President of Government Affairs for Farm Credit Council here in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Skylar.
Thanks for having me, Clint.
Yeah, it's awesome to catch up with you.
Yeah, it's good to see you again. Yeah. We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. A fellow Texan, fellow West Texan, let's say. She knows what a sandhill is. She knows what a pivot is, a cotton plant. She's probably even done some of the work herself before.
I have, you know, but grew up on a cotton farm in West Texas. And I used to say that my dad taught me how to drive a tractor, but he never really trusted me to plow the actual rows, but we had the cleanest turn rows in the county.
That's what I like to hear. Clean turn rows are impressive.
Oh, yeah.
Just to set the context of this discussion, too, Skylar's drinking out of a coffee mug that has the Come and Take It logo. I love it.
Yes, I've gotten the opportunity to share the story of the Texas Revolution a lot with my coworkers who say, what is that on your coffee cup? Is that a cigar? Is that a duck call? No, it's cannon.
A duck call. That is ludicrous.
I know. It was blasphemy, really.
For real. Before we're done today, I want to hear that story, or your version of the story.
Okay, I'll tell you the abbreviated.
But let's start by talking about what you do in your current role.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like you said, I'm the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Farm Credit Council, which means I am one of our lobbyists for the farm credit system. And the way we kind of split things up here is I primarily lobby the United States Senate because that's where I have more of my background here in Washington, D.C. But really, I see my job as advocating for the farm credit system, and because we're a cooperative, for our customers, our farmers and ranchers and rural residents. And because of that, you know, cooperative principle, any policy that I'm looking at, anything that we're advocating for, we really look at it through the lens of our customers, because if our customers are successful, we're successful. But yes, I am a registered lobbyist, which is kind of a hated profession, but, you know, in America, we have a really great ability and right to petition our government. And so I view my role as, you know, educating staffers and members of Congress and senators on agriculture, on the farm credit system, and really trying to bridge that gap between our members and their elected officials.
Yep. It's an interesting dynamic when you really talk about or think about cooperatives. Really, ultimately, we're one of the few businesses out there that the success of our customers is really emulates and mirrors the success that we have as a business. So it's a mutually beneficial type of situation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in agriculture, cooperatives are just kind of second nature. They're everywhere. It's like your cooperative cotton gin, your grain elevator, your farm credit system. But sometimes up here, I have to use different analogies with congressional staff. So I say, have you shopped at REI? And you know how you get that card? Yep. And that usually is bridges the gap pretty well.
That's a good example.
Yeah.
For sure. So how'd you get to where you are today?
Honestly, kind of by accident, and there was a lot of people that helped me along the way. But like I said, I grew up on a cotton farm in West Texas, went to school in Sudan, which is a town of about 800 people, but I actually grew up about 20 miles outside of there, a little bitty map dot called Beulah, Texas. That's where our farm is. And it's not even incorporated or have a population sign, but grew up in agriculture and definitely did all of the FFA and showing animals, and I just absolutely loved it. Going to school in such a small place too, you know, also played basketball and was, you know, a student body, you know, officer and things like that, because you kind of have to be, there's not a lot of people to choose from.
Yep.
But,
so you said that's Beulah as in Ferris Bueller.
No, just B-U-L-A. God's country, really.
That's right.
But yeah, definitely had a passion for agriculture. And when I went to Texas Tech, I studied ag economics. And I knew I wanted to do something in agriculture, but I never knew what that was. Frankly, I just don't know if I have the stomach to actually be a farmer. They put so much on the line every single day, every single year. And so I totally appreciate what farmers do. I just don't know if I could do that. And I was fortunate enough to get an internship through the Texas Tech Congressional Internship Program and intern for the House Agriculture Committee. And as soon as I got to DC, I thought, oh my gosh, I love this. This makes total sense. There's so many people up here that need to understand what agriculture is, how important it is to our nation. And I can speak DC and I can speak agriculture. And and so I knew that I had found the place I needed to be. I was very fortunate. There was an opening right as my internship was ending, and I was able to stay up here and work for two really great chairmen of the House Agriculture Committee, Frank Lucas from Oklahoma and Mike Conaway from West Texas. And then got the great opportunity to move over to the Senate side and work on ag issues for a really great gentleman from Arkansas, Senator John Bozeman, who's now the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. So had, like I said, a lot of great people who helped me along the way, but really just trying to, I keep coming back to this, but bridge that gap between rural America and Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that's a great combination. Let's talk about your passion for agriculture, and then let's talk about speaking D.C., as you said. What really gives you, brought you to the passion that you have today for agriculture?
You know, I think it's just in my blood, honestly. My great-grandfather grew up in Southern Virginia, actually, on my mom's side, and he ran away from home and jumped on a train, drank ice water because he had no money, and he said he wanted to get off in a place where he could plow for a mile without running into a tree stump, and he found that outside of Amarillo, Texas. So all of us West Texans understand that, panhandle folks. You know, so long line of farmers and ranchers on my mom's side, you know, my dad's side, another long line of farmers and ranchers. You know, my grandparents all went through the Dust Bowl and the Great Depression, and just really seeing firsthand what agriculture means and how hard our farmers and ranchers work, and how it's, you know, now less than 2% of our population that produces all the food, all the fiber, that not only for the U.S., but across the globe, really. And so I just think that it's a pretty noble profession, agriculture. Mm-hmm. And it's something not like any other. So, and I think, you know, through FFA and some of those other programs in high school, you know, it's, agriculture's given a lot to me. It's taught me a lot of responsibility, a lot of hard work, built a lot of character. Mm-hmm. But, so I just wanted to give back in some way.
Yep. Yep. I'd say my belly definitely agrees with you that it's a noble profession.
Definitely. Mine too.
I'm with you. So you spent some time, you started out in DC with an internship, started out with House Ag Committee?
Yes.
Okay. Then went to...
Stayed at the House Ag Committee, and then went over to the Senate side and worked for Senator Bozeman.
Okay, so you've seen a lot of things in D.C. with regards to ag policy. What are some of the more memorable instances or times that you could talk about?
So my not including my internship, but my first real job was the staff assistant for the House Agriculture Committee. And that's the person that greets you at the front office and answers the phone calls and schedules meetings and takes pictures and kind of, you know, your other duties as assigned type thing. And whenever I first got to DC, we were in the midst of the 2014 Farm Bill that started out as the 2011 Farm Bill, right? It took a long time to get that done. But through, you know, just sheer grit, those members got it done in 2014. And I'll never forget that the last thing that we had to, and I guess this isn't memorable, but this is just kind of funny. But the last thing that was closed out was the dairy title, because there were some senators who cared a lot about dairy programs. And we joked, we were like, let's just send our economist over there and he can just put in numbers in the spreadsheet until the senator is happy. but whenever we got back and we were celebrating, we got the chairman a cake and they said, all right, Skylar, you have to ice it and draw a milk carton on there. I was like, oh my gosh, other duties as assigned, definitely. Yep. But no, so that was just kind of funny. And then,
you never told me you're an artist too.
Oh, well, I'm not. That was just basically a box, but it was all in good fun. But you know, working through COVID on the Hill was pretty tough, and it hit agriculture so hard. It was such an odd time, honestly, and impacted so many people. And so I think through that, just trying to provide resources and provide some help to farmers who are going through that. And so I worked on a lot of legislation for Senator Bozeman in that. And it's really pretty cool to be able to hear from your constituents and take a problem, try to craft a solution. And then at the end of the day, even though it's one teeny tiny line, you're like, oh, wow, you know, the senator that I work for, he got that line in that bill, and that's going to help people in that state.
Yep. So pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. So DC, you're at now, is a time in which it's hard to choose the adjectives, but maybe different than it has been in the past. Maybe air quotes interesting. what's it look like right now as we look at a new farm bill?
Right. So as we sit right now, the 2018 Farm Bill has been extended twice for 1 year, and it's actually expired right now. But in the reconciliation process, which is a process that if either of the parties win all three branches, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, they're going to use reconciliation to fast track legislation through the Senate. Republicans have done it. Democrats have done it. They will continue to do that whenever there's a trifecta. So for the Republicans, there was the one big, beautiful bill. And in that was about $66 billion for agriculture. So that was the largest investment in the farm safety net since the 2002 Farm Bill, which was written by a great West Texan, Mr. Larry Compest. But so that was really good. There had been a lot of calls, and frankly, a lot of Republicans and Democrats agreed on, look, we've got to improve the farm safety net. But because reconciliation is such a special process, it can only include things that have what we call a score. So if it's associated with money, does it spend money? Does it save money? And so...
So would that be like a CBO score?
Yeah, like a CBO score.
Sort of,
yeah.
Okay.
It has to impact the federal, the budget, I believe.
Right.
I could be a little foggy on my terms there, but generally speaking, a farm bill is a huge bill. It's probably 1,000 pages, and they were able to get 35 really, really important pages done in one big, beautiful bill. Mm-hmm. But there's still over 800 pages of policy that don't necessarily impact this government spending, but are really important to farmers and ranchers' lives that's still waiting to get done. And, you know, I think that if it was just up to what we call the four corners or the big four, so that's the chair and the ranking member of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees, we'd have it done. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of broader issues that are holding it up, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. We've got two great chairmen, a guy named G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania, chairing the House Ag Committee, Senator John Bozeman, my old boss, chairing the Senate Ag Committee, and then two Minnesotans Representative Angie Craig from Minnesota and Senator Amy Klobuchar, also from Minnesota. And like I said, if it was up to those four, they could hammer this out. They're all four just really strong ag advocates. But they're working really hard at the staff level to try and get something done. And and get a product that the Republicans and Democrats can stand behind, and it can go across both chambers and to the president's desk.
Yep. Hopefully sooner than later.
Gosh, I would hope so.
Yep. So one of the things is we spent this week here in D.C. talking to representatives and their staff, and otherwise it seems like there's a lot of, I won't say miscommunication, but maybe lack of understanding and education. So I think that's an important part of what we do, and hopefully what I think, believe, I would say what you do out here. But it's interesting, like yesterday I heard that one of the things holding up the new farm bill was that there were some arguments, and this came from a member, but a disagreement on hemp production.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not asking you specifically about that, but it just sure seems like, how do we refocus on the big picture, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. Well, and that's bled into the ag appropriations fight, too. So the farm bill, I say, kind of bakes the pie, and then the appropriations bill kind of slices the pie out in terms of money. But, yeah, that's... you know, some people call it a loophole. Some people call it, you know, a growing business in the hemp industry. I only know enough to be dangerous about that. But, you know, it's really kind of a big dance, right? You've got to balance out parochial issues and state-based issues, because if you can't get your constituencies behind that, well, then as a member of Congress, why would you vote for it? Mm-hmm. And so you have to balance out enough of, okay, can we strike that right balance? Can we come to a compromise? I know that's a big dirty word in D.C., right? You know, not everybody gets everything they want, but, right? It's a novel concept, yep. Right? But, yep. But really trying to bring the, like you said, bring the focus back to, this is rural America. These are farmers and ranchers. This is important. And, you know, can we set aside the 20% we disagree on and focus on the 80% we do agree on and get that done?
Yep. Yep. That'd be a really good, cool idea to focus on the 80%.
Yeah. You know, I wish I could say I came up with that. But it's kind of a, like an unwritten rule of, you know, trying to bridge that that partisan divide, right? You know, there might be things that Republicans and Democrats really disagree on, and sometimes that might be actually 80%. And mm-hmm. Let's focus on the 20% that we do agree on. But generally speaking, you know, you can find common ground. The people that are up here, the staff that are up here, they want to do a good job, and they want to serve their country and make it a better place than they found it. And they may have different ideas about doing that, but the passion and the want to is there.
Right, right. Let's shift gears just a little bit. You work for Farm Credit Council. Obviously, all of us are affiliated with Farm Credit. Let's talk about Farm Credit a little bit. And I know there's some things with what we would like to see on the farm bill that we are, you know, interested in. Let's talk about those a little bit, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to take it back to reconciliation just a little bit, or even, you know, whenever the 18 farm bill was about to expire, we had very clear direction from the committee, you know, all right, Farm Credit, and give us your priorities, but they need to be bipartisan, and they can't cost any money because we don't have any money to go around. And so that meant we didn't get to ride on reconciliation. So right. The credit title of the farm bill is still one of those outstanding titles. And I'll pick a few things that we're focusing on. You know, I think as all farmers and ranchers know, the cost of doing business is just so high these days. And one of the tools in our toolbox is partnering with the Farm Service Agency and utilizing those guaranteed loans. Those loans have limits on them, those guarantees, and they haven't been updated since the 18 Farm Bill in a meaningful way. They're adjusted for inflation, but they need to be brought up. The great news about that is that it doesn't cost any money, and Republicans agree on it, and Democrats agree on it. We might have to, you know, change up the levels a little bit, but it's something that's very bipartisan, very much agreed on. So that's really good. We're also looking to be able to finance more what we call essential community facilities. So these are things like rural hospitals and clinics, childcare, just things that make that are really important in where you live. And people in urban areas have access to this. People in rural areas ought to as well. And there's, we have some limited authority there, but we're looking to more clarify it and provide that for our customers and our employees, frankly, that live in these rural areas.
Right.
So those are a couple of things that we're working on, and a couple of regulatory reform, and just making it a little bit easier to and faster to help our customers.
Yeah, I think those will be great, you know, improvements to the system if we can get those included. If we can actually just pass a farm bill.
Yes, yes. I mean, and that's the big focus. Again, like I said at the beginning, I'm not the only lobbyist here. There's a team of us, but we really look at this through our customers' eyes. And there's so many other things too that are really important that need to get across the finish line. So it's kind of like, let's get a farm bill first and help our customers first. And then what can we do for farm credit? What can make it easier for us to fulfill our mission?
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. Give you a fist bump now.
Awesome.
Talking about Skyler Souder, one of the things I want to talk about is you've been very successful since getting out of Texas Tech. I'm curious, what advice might you have for other young agriculturalists on, you know, simply how to be successful and what's contributed to yours?
Yeah. You know, I think find some good mentors. And usually that doesn't involve asking, will you be my mentor? It's just building a relationship with somebody and learning from somebody. I've had some awesome mentors and friends in my life that have really, really helped me. But I think, you know, take advantage and do everything you can. Not to sound too corny, but at least whenever I was at Texas Tech, the tagline was from here it's possible. And I remember I was like, oh, I've got to do the DC internship. I've got to do these study abroads. We've got to, you know, try to experience as much as you can. Do some internships and see what you like. See what you don't like. See what you're good at. See what you're not good at.
Right.
And that will really, I think, help you play to your strengths and find your passions about what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I've been very blessed that I've been in the right place at the right time and had some people who believed in me at the right time. But you know, just try to experience as much as you can.
Yeah. No, I think that's great stuff. I think what I've always admired about you is that you're hungry. I mean, one of the things that I liked, there was a sermon that a preacher did when I was in college, actually, that I've always remembered on being successful. It was be desperate. You got to be desperate. You got to be hungry. You got to do well at the basics. So the basic things you've got to be really good at. You've got to accomplish the basic things before you move on to the detail. And then always expect to win. If you're desperate and you're really good at the basics, you got to expect to win on an everyday basis and things come your way.
Yeah. Yeah. We as an office took the strengths finder test, and one of mine was, always very high on competition. I probably made my way to DC, and that's probably a good thing, but very much so in like a team way. Like, I want farm credit to win. I want, you know, when I worked for the senators, like I want agriculture to win.
That's right.
And I just kind of want to sell out to do that. So I don't know, maybe it's something in the water in West Texas.
Well, I think there is, because I think similarly, you know, one of the things that I'll say on the air in Washington, D.C., the most political place in this world for that matter, is losing sucks.
Yeah.
Losing sucks. And waking up every day intending on not losing is 85% of the battle in life, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, I do want to, like, make one point of clarification on that, because I do think that, unfortunately, in D.C., we're in a spot where it is very much red jerseys versus blue jerseys, Republicans versus Democrats, and very polarizing. And I do think that you can be competitive and you can want to win, but understand that it's not a zero-sum game. It's not I win, you lose. There are ways to make sure that everybody wins. And unfortunately, I think that sometimes we have drilled it down to, well, if it's good for this side, it's bad for the other side. And it's not always the case.
Exactly.
And so I think that, you know, especially for farm credit, you know, we we are a pretty bipartisan issue, mm-hmm. And just want Farm Credit to win.
Yep. Well, ultimate winners never win because of the failure of their competition.
Correct.
Ultimate winners, ultimate competitors want to beat their competition when they're at the best.
Yeah.
So, no, that's great stuff. I've got to come back. We talked about your mug early in the discussion, the come and take it mug. And I told you I had to hear the story, the Texan story there. So.
Yeah. You know, living in DC, there's a few other Texans in the office, but at one point I was the only Texan. And so invariably they'd ask me, what does this mean? And so the abbreviated version I would give them is, well, there's a bunch of Texans living in Goliad. Mm-hmm. There's a Mexican cannon in the town. Mm-hmm. And one day the Mexican army said, hey, you know, we'd like our cannon back. And the people of Goliad said, nah. And the Mexican army said, no, really, we really want it back. And they said, but really, we're not going to give it back. And so the Mexican army said, well, then we'll fight you. And the Texan said, well, why don't you just come on and take it?
Boom. Yeah, that's good stuff right there.
And then I think usually my coworkers are like, and that is why Skylar is the way she is.
No, I like it. I like it. What do you guys think about me going back and using that one for my wife?
Oh, I don't know if that's going to work.
Happy wife,
happy life, Clint.
Yeah. No, but Skylar, that's one of the things. You're a true Texan. She's actually wearing a Texas flag lapel pin today. So for those of you listening, just a little bit more about Skylar Souter from Beulah/Sudan, Texas. She is a Texan, and she's all about coming and taking it.
Yes.
One of the things I wanted to touch on as we kind of close down is the noble effort. So I think what you do and what you've done is definitely a noble effort in making that connection. I know you said early in our conversation today that you didn't necessarily have the stomach for production agriculture, but the thing about it is it takes a whole team. And so I just wanted to highlight that noble effort. I think what you do here is your part in the team of agriculture. It's your part in what, you know, those producers are doing back in Lamb County.
Lamb and Bailey.
Lamb and Bailey County in Beulah, Texas.
Yes,
Beulah, Texas. Sorry. When you said that earlier, I was thinking of Ferris Bueller and when the principal's calling his name.
Yep.
It's my simple way of remembering it. But, you know, wanted to highlight that. I think you do a great job out here for Farm Credit. I think you do an awesome job for agriculture as a whole. It's been a great discussion today. I appreciate your friendship and what you do for us out here. And thank you for being here today.
Well, thank you, too. I appreciate it. And, man, I don't know if a registered lobbyist has ever been called noble, so thank you so much.
Well, it takes us all. Just because you're a card-carrying lobbyist, I mean, you're doing great work.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on. Thanks so much for all of what all y'all do for agriculture, what Capital Farm Credit does for agriculture, and thanks again.
Yes, ma'am. If you enjoyed this discussion today, please like and subscribe. Listen to us next time. We'll try to keep putting out content that you guys enjoy. Thank you. Thanks for joining us today on Capital Roots. Whether you're working the land, raising livestock, or simply living the rural life, we're proud to stand with you. Stay connected, stay inspired, and remember, at Capital Farm Credit, we're not just financing agriculture, we're growing communities. Until next time, take care and keep your roots strong.